Welcome to the Deep Dive. Have you ever stopped to think about the giant companies behind the power we use every day? Not just keeping the lights on, but actively shaping the future of our climate. Well, today, that's exactly what we're doing. We're taking a really comprehensive deep dive into Iberdrola SA. They're a massive global player, and their influence, well, it might be bigger than you realize. Our mission today really is to cut through all the noise, the heaps of articles, research reports, complex data. We want to distill it all down into the most important nuggets of knowledge for you. We'll be touching on, well, everything from sweeping European energy policies, the nitty-gritty of grid infrastructure, all the way to the potential of green hydrogen. Think of this as your essential guide, your shortcut to understanding a really crucial force in this global energy transition. We're going to explore their operations, their financial health, their strategic moves across different continents. It's quite a story. Scale, strategy, sustainability.
Yeah, and what's fascinating, I think, is seeing how all these different pieces actually weave together. We'll look at the policy landscape, which is driving just a seismic shift in energy right now. We'll unpack how these different regulatory frameworks in various markets really impact a company's stability. And then we'll zoom right in on Iberdrola's specific model, their integrated approach. It's about connecting the dots, not just seeing the individual parts, but understanding how they fit together to make them such a formidable player in the utility world, navigating the opportunities, but also, importantly, the challenges of this rapidly changing world.
Exactly. So if you're curious about what it really takes to lead in the global energy space right now, or maybe just want to grasp the so what behind these huge infrastructure investments that, let's face it, affect all of us, then definitely stick with us. We're about to unpack a really compelling case study. It shines a light on that complex dance between policy, technology, and finance in this urgent quest for a sustainable energy future. A future that's, well, it's being built right now, all around us. Okay, let's set the stage first. Let's look at the big picture, because Iberdrola, big as it is, isn't operating in a bubble. It's a massive company, sure, but it's responding to an even bigger shift, the European energy transition. And this isn't just some passing trend. It's a profound structural overhaul of the entire continent's energy system.
Absolutely. And right at the heart of it, you've got this incredibly robust, legally binding policy framework. Things like the European Green Deal, the European Climate Law, these aren't just suggestions, they are concrete legal mandates. The goal, climate neutrality across Europe by 2050.
And that legal commitment, it fundamentally changes the game for utilities, doesn't it? It creates this predictable long-term demand for renewables. And critically, the need for massive grid investments to handle all that new green power.
Precisely. And a key piece is the revised Renewable Energy Directive. It sets a binding minimum target, 42.5% renewables in gross final energy consumption by 2030, with an ambition to even reach 45%.
Wow. I mean, just try to picture that. An entire continent essentially signing a contract to completely redesign its power system over, what, the next 25 years? It gives you a sense of the sheer scale we're talking about. That's a powerful driver for companies like Iberdrola. And it's not just talk, is it? The investment numbers themselves are pretty compelling. In 2023 alone, EU member states pumped nearly $110 billion into renewable energy generation. Now, here's a twist. The energy crisis after Russia's 2022 invasion. Hugely disruptive, obviously. But paradoxically, it actually seemed to accelerate the green transition.
That's right. The Repower EU plan, which came directly out of that crisis, it explicitly linked expanding renewables to, well, critical goals like energy security. Reducing reliance on Russian fossil fuels became paramount.
So what started as a climate goal morphed into a national security imperative. That must have solidified political and financial support massively.
It did. The economic case for renewables suddenly became even stronger, moving beyond just environmental benefits. It became strategic.
That makes you wonder, doesn't it? Could future geopolitical crises, even if they seem unrelated, act as unexpected catalysts for green energy? A strange sort of silver lining.
It's a fascinating thought. Crises forcing progress in unexpected ways. And if we connect this back to the energy mix, the results of all this policy and investment are already becoming really clear. It's quite dramatic. By 2024, renewables hit a record 47% share of EU electricity generation, while fossil fuels dropped to a historic low, just 29%. That's a fundamental shift.
47% renewables. That's huge progress.
It is. And solar power was a big driver. Its generation jumped 22% in 2024. And its share, 11%, actually surpassed coal's 10% share for the first time ever.
Solar overtaking coal in Europe. That's a milestone.
Definitely. It signals a structural change, not just a temporary blip. It really feels like a changing of the guard in the energy landscape. Solar taking that prominent spot coal held for so long.
Okay, but here's where it gets tricky, right? This rapid build-out of renewables, especially intermittent ones like wind and solar, they aren't always generating power consistently. So how do you manage that? Keep the grid stable?
That's the massive challenge. The rapid expansion puts enormous strain on the existing grid infrastructure. It demands a parallel surge in investment, not just connecting new farms, but building smarter, more flexible networks. Networks that can handle that variability, ensure stability, balance supply and demand second by second.
And that dynamic shifts where the value lies, doesn't it? It's not just about generation anymore.
Exactly. Significant value moves towards that critical network infrastructure, the pipes and wires that make it all work reliably.
So the transition isn't just wind turbines and solar panels. It's the transmission lines, the substations, the digital controls, the storage.
All the things needed to get that green energy reliably to homes and businesses. And this creates a huge structural tailwind for utilities with large regulated grid assets.
Utilities that look a lot like Iberdrola.
Precisely. Which leads us perfectly into how they navigate these complex environments, especially the regulatory ones. Because this raises a key question. How does a global company like Iberdrola maintain stable earnings, maintain growth, when they operate across so many different regulatory systems?
Yeah.
Their success is, well, it's intrinsically linked to those frameworks.
Right. That regulatory stability is the bedrock for these huge long-term investments, isn't it?
Absolutely. Without clear rules, predictable returns, these multi-decade projects just wouldn't happen. And each market Iberdrola is in, Spain, UK, US, Brazil, has its own unique rules, its own nuances. Understanding those local frameworks is absolutely key to understanding Iberdrola's performance. It's definitely not a one-size-fits-all game.
Okay, so let's zoom in. How do these rules play out? Let's start with their home turf, Spain.
Right, Spain. The environment there is evolving quite quickly to support the transition. There's a big focus on system resilience, on storage, on grid flexibility. This need was really highlighted after a significant blackout back in April 2025.
Ah, okay, so that event spurred action.
It did. It directly led to Royal Decree Law 7/2025, which aimed to strengthen grid supervision and, crucially, facilitate energy storage development. The overall system operates under national laws, EU directives, and the CNMC, the National Markets and Competition Commission, which sets tariffs and market rules.
So that 2025 blackout really underscored the urgency for grid modernization.
Exactly. It pushed new regulations and created opportunities for companies that can deliver those grid solutions, that storage capability.
Okay, let's hop across the channel to the UK. A different model there.
Different, yes, but also focused on investment visibility. The UK sector is regulated by Ofgem, and network companies like Iberdrola's Scottish Power operate under this framework called RIO.
RIO, what does that stand for?
Revenue equals incentives plus innovation plus outputs. It's a price control mechanism designed to give long-term revenue visibility, which, as we said, is crucial for these big investments. And it actively encourages investment in low-carbon systems.
How does it do that?
Well, the current controls, like RIO T2 for transmission and RIO ED2 for distribution, they allow companies to earn a regulated return on their assets. But crucially, they also build in incentives and penalties based on performance against specific targets, things like reliability, efficiency, customer satisfaction.
Ah, so it rewards efficiency and innovation while still providing predictable returns.
Precisely. That makes the UK a pretty attractive market for stable grid investments.
Got it. Now let's tackle the US. You mentioned it's fragmented but crucial.
Yes, fragmented is the word. Regulation is primarily at the state level through various public utility commissions or PUCs. The traditional model is cost of service or COS regulation.
Explain that quickly.
Basically, utilities recover their prudent costs and earn a regulated return on equity or ROE on their investments. It provides stability and predictability generally, even with the state-by-state complexity.
But you mentioned a trend towards something else.
Yes, performance-based regulation, or PBR. It's gaining traction. PBR tries to better align the utility's financial incentives with state policy goals, things like energy efficiency, grid modernization, integrating renewables.
So potentially rewarding utilities that excel in innovation and meeting those policy goals.
Exactly. Which could align well with Iberdrola's focus on smart grids, given their Avangrid subsidiary there.
Okay, one more key market, Brazil. Rapidly developing, you said.
Very much so. Regulated by the Ministry of Mines and Energy, MME, and ENEL, the energy agency. A really significant recent development, highly relevant for Iberdrola's Neo Energia there, is Brazil's first regulatory framework for energy storage.
Ah, storage again. Why now in Brazil?
It's a direct response to the rapid growth of intermittent renewables outpacing the existing transmission capacity. They need more flexibility, more stability.
So Brazil's being proactive, recognizing the infrastructure needs for its growing renewable sector.
Yes, and that creates new avenues for investment. It makes you wonder how this new storage framework might accelerate renewable deployment there, making Brazil potentially even more attractive.
Okay, so across all these markets, Spain, UK, US, Brazil, you have frameworks designed for stability, but they're not immune to wider economic pressures like inflation.
Correct. That's a key challenge. Regulatory lag is a factor. The process for utilities to adjust their rates to cover rising costs often takes time. Regulatory reviews, approvals.
So in a high inflation period, costs might rise faster than they can recover them through tariffs.
Exactly. And that can temporarily squeeze margins, impact profitability. It's a constant balancing act.
And that macroeconomic context, it leads us right into the dynamics of the electricity market itself and the role of carbon costs.
Yes. Understanding how European electricity prices are actually set is critical, and the impact of carbon. European wholesale prices generally operate on a marginal cost pricing system, meaning the price is set by the most expensive power plant needed to meet demand at that specific moment. And often, historically and recently, that's been a natural gas plant.
And that explains the crazy volatility during the 2022 energy crisis.
Precisely. When Russian gas supplies were cut, gas prices soared. And because gas plants were often setting the price, electricity prices surged right alongside them, up to 1,500% from early 2021 levels in some cases.
Wow. So gas prices have this outsized influence.
They do. It makes the market very sensitive to gas supply issues. Now, for companies like Iberdrola, with lots of low-cost renewables, hydro, nuclear, this can lead to windfall profits when prices spike.
But that also attracts attention, right? Regulatory intervention.
Absolutely. We saw that across Europe. Windfall taxes, revenue caps, government stepping in. If you visualize it, think of a line of power plants, cheapest to most expensive. The last one needed sets the price for everyone. That's marginal cost pricing.
Okay. But Europe has a tool to specifically address carbon emissions, doesn't it? The ETS.
Yes, the EU emissions trading system. It's the main carbon pricing tool. It caps emissions from about 45% of EU sectors, including power generation. Emitters need allowances for every ton of CO2 they release. If they don't have enough, they buy them.
Creating a direct cost for pollution.
Exactly. And that gives a structural economic advantage to low-carbon generators, renewables, hydro, nuclear, because they largely avoid those costs. The ETS effectively internalizes the environmental cost of carbon into the market price,
providing a clear economic incentive to invest in cleaner generation.
Precisely. And you have to wonder, if the ETS cap tightens further or expands to new sectors, how much stronger will that advantage become for players like Iberdrola?
Interesting. Now, what about direct subsidies for renewables? Are they still a major factor?
Less so than they used to be, which actually reflects the growing competitiveness of renewables. EU renewable subsidies fell from around $89 billion in 2020 to an estimated $61 billion in 2023.
Why the drop?
Largely because those high wholesale prices we discussed reduced the need for the top-up payments many older support schemes provide. The market price was often high enough.
Okay. But what about fossil fuel subsidies?
Still significant, unfortunately. Around $111 billion in 2023, though down from the 2022 crisis peak.
So renewables are becoming more competitive, moving towards market-based revenues like PPAs.
Right. Corporate power purchase agreements. It's a sign of maturity. But the persistence of fossil fuel subsidies does highlight an ongoing policy imbalance that needs addressing.
Got it. So understanding these market dynamics really sets the stage for digging into Iberdrola's specific business model.
Yeah.
How do they navigate all this? Okay, so let's unpack Iberdrola itself. With that crucial market context, what is their business model? How are they structured?
At its core, Iberdrola uses a vertically integrated model, meaning they're involved in multiple stages: generation, transmission, distribution, and supplying energy to customers.
And they structure this around different segments?
Yes, three core segments: networks, renewables, and generation and supply. The idea is to balance stable, regulated activities like the networks with growth-oriented, more market-exposed operations, like some of the renewables and supply business.
Trying to create synergies and de-risk the whole operation.
Exactly. It's a strategic choice that differentiates them from pure-play companies that might only do renewables or only run grids.
Okay, let's break down those sigmas. Networks first, you called it the bedrock.
It really is foundational. This segment owns and operates the electricity transmission and distribution grids, the wires, the poles, the substations. It's their largest segment by assets, about $49 billion in the first half of 2025. And crucially, its revenues are primarily regulated.
Providing that stable, predictable earnings stream.
Precisely. Often inflation-linked, too. It underpins their financial strength and helps fund growth elsewhere. Their main network operations are in Spain, the UK, the US via Avangrid, and Brazil via Neoenergia.
Like the reliable railway tracks for all the energy trains.
That's a good analogy, generating consistent regulated fees.
Okay, then renewables, the growth engine.
Undoubtedly. Iberdrola is a global leader here, especially strong in wind power. Mid-2025, they had around 47,600 megawatts of operational renewable capacity. That's huge. This is where they directly capture the upside of the energy transition.
But you mentioned they're trying to de-risk revenues here, too.
Yes, there's a growing focus on securing long-term contracts, like power purchase agreements, PPAs. It's a strategic move away from pure merchant risk, aiming for more stable, predictable cash flows, even from the growth engine.
Makes sense. And the third segment, generation and supply.
Right. This includes their conventional power plants, efficient gas turbines, CCGTs, nuclear, and also their retail electricity and gas supply business. They serve a massive customer base globally, 30 to 36 million customers.
So this provides balance in customer reach.
Yes, vertical integration. It helps hedge their generation output against customer demand. And the flexible generation assets can sometimes benefit from market volatility, but its exposure to commodity prices makes it more cyclical than networks.
So the balance between these three is really key to their strategy.
Absolutely critical.
Now, something that really stood out to me was their discipline about where they invest. It's not just random, is it?
Not at all. It's incredibly disciplined. Their international strategy focuses squarely on large, stable markets. Markets with transparent, predictable regulatory frameworks.
To minimize political and regulatory risk.
Exactly. Their 2024-2026 plan targets putting 85% of their investment into countries with strong A-level credit ratings.
So focusing on secure environments for these massive long-term investments.
Yes. It reduces country-specific risks and provides a solid platform. It's not throwing darts at a map. It's calculated.
And the investment breakdown reflects that. You mentioned U.S. and U.K. getting the lion's share.
That's right. For 2024-2026 net investment, U.S. gets 35%, U.K. gets 24%, then Spain 15%, Brazil 12%. It clearly shows a preference for those mature regulatory systems, especially for grid investment.
And that Mexico divestment ties into this, selling off thermal assets there.
Perfectly. It reinforces the pivot away from markets seen as having higher political risk and simultaneously moves away from fossil fuels. Strategic exit.
Which brings us to a core theme, de-risking their earnings.
Yes, a central pillar. That 2024-2026 strategic plan sets a very clear target. 70% of group EBITDA from stable sources by 2026.
Stable meaning regulated networks and long-term contracted renewables.
Exactly. It's a direct lesson learned from the volatility of 2022-2024. It's a clear pivot towards predictability, resilience, reducing exposure to those volatile wholesale markets, a focus on high-quality earnings.
And the capital allocation drives this, putting 60% of net investment into networks.
Precisely. $21.5 billion through 2026 going into expanding that regulated asset base. By 2026, the plan is for networks and renewables each to contribute around 50% of total EBITDA, which implies a huge chunk of those renewables must be under long-term contracts to hit that 70% overall stable target.
How much more resilient might this make them to future market shocks compared to peers who are more exposed?
Potentially significantly more resilient, it could be a defining competitive advantage.
Okay, let's dive deeper into that renewables growth engine. It's massive, and you said it's shifting towards offshore wind.
Yes. The portfolio is huge, 47.6 gigawatts mid-2025, historically strong in onshore wind and hydro. But the big push now, the major investment, is in offshore wind. It's more complex, more capital intensive, but it's where they've built a leading global position.
And the investment reflects that. Over half the renewables budget going to offshore.
Correct. Over half of that $15.5 billion renewables investment for 2024-2026 is for offshore projects already under construction. U.S., U.K., France, Germany.
Big projects like East Anglia 3, Vineyard Wind 1.
Exactly. Huge undertakings showcasing their ambition and technical expertise. They aim to add 3,000 mW of new offshore wind from 2027, reaching 5,000 mW total. Solar PV is also getting significant investment, around 2,100 mW new capacity planned by 2026.
That scale and focus really sets them apart, which leads us nicely to comparing them to the competition. How do they stack up? So when you put Iberdrola side by side with other big energy players, do they genuinely stand out?
Oh, absolutely. They are just another utility. They're the largest in Europe by market cap, top two globally. Around $104.5 billion as of August 2025. That scale gives them huge advantages accessing capital, executing giant projects.
And the market recognizes this. You mentioned a valuation premium?
Often, yes. It's typically attributed to their lower risk profile, that big base of diverse regulated assets we keep mentioning, plus a clear growth strategy, strong execution track record, and consistent dividend growth.
So their integrated model differentiates them from, say, a pure renewables player like Ørsted or a pure network operator.
Definitely. They compete with Ørsted in offshore wind, of course, but Iberdrola's model is broader, more balanced. The market seems to reward that strategic clarity and operational excellence. If you look at peer comparisons, Enel, EDP, RWE, Ørsted Iberdrola often leads on key metrics.
And you mentioned their competitive edge isn't just size, it's the synergy within that integrated model.
That's the core of it, I think. The synergy between regulated networks and renewable generation is powerful. Their deep expertise running huge, complex grids informs how they plan and connect new renewable projects efficiently. And in turn, all that new renewable growth necessitates more grid investment. It's a virtuous cycle.
An advantage pure play competitors struggle to replicate.
Exactly. It creates efficiencies, optimizes capital deployment across the whole business.
And in offshore wind specifically, they have that first mover advantage.
They do. They leverage decades of onshore wind experience to de-risk complex offshore projects early on. They invested aggressively, built deep technical expertise critical in a talent-constrained industry, and importantly, fostered robust local supply chains like in Spain's Basque Country, ensuring priority access to components.
How much protection does that first mover advantage and supply chain strength give them against new entrants in offshore wind? It's so capital intensive.
It provides a significant barrier. It's not easy for newcomers to replicate that expertise, those relationships, that scale quickly.
Okay, but it's not just physical assets. You highlighted their digital edge too.
Yes, digitalization is core. They're investing $385 million a year through 2026 in innovation and digitalization, aiming to automate 85% of their high and medium voltage grids. They pioneered smart grids, deployed around 15 million smart meters globally.
Creating a data-rich foundation.
Right. And now they're building on that with advanced platforms using edge computing, digital twins, AI to optimize asset management, enhance grid flexibility, enable predictive maintenance, fix problems before they happen.
And that ties back to the regulatory side, especially with performance-based regulation.
Absolutely. PBR frameworks in places like the US and UK directly reward better reliability and efficiency. Iberdrola's technological leadership positions them to outperform in those frameworks, turning digital prowess into financial advantage.
Like having a digital twin of the grid to simulate and predict issues.
Exactly. Improving reliability, cutting costs.
And beyond organic growth in tech, strategic partnerships are key too.
Very key. The 2024-2026 plan includes $5 billion of investments with partners. It accelerates growth, de-risks big investments, opens new markets or technologies.
Allowing them to do more than their balance sheet might allow alone?
Precisely. Take the joint venture with Echelon for data centers in Spain. Iberdrola brings land and grid connection expertise to meet this huge new source of electricity demand.
Or the partnership with BP for green hydrogen?
Yes. Building an industrial-scale facility in Castellón. It establishes an early position in a key future tech while sharing the costs and risks. These partnerships are strategically vital.
Okay, so strategy, scale, tech edge. Let's get to the bottom line. What do the financials look like? Let's review the last 5 years or so.
Okay, financials. 2020 to 2024. They've shown really strong, consistent performance, quite resilient despite market volatility. Revenues fluctuated, as you'd expect, with commodity prices from $33 billion in 2020 up to nearly $45 billion in 2024, but with ups and downs. But critically, EBITDA, net profit, and operating cash flow, FFO, showed a clear upward trend.
Ah, so revenues bounced around, but profits and cash flow grew steadily.
Exactly. EBITDA went from $10 billion in 2020 to nearly $17 billion in 2024. Net profit grew from $3.6 billion to $5.6 billion. Operating cash flow hit $11.8 billion in 2024.
That divergence is telling. It highlights the growing contribution from stable networks and contracted renewables, insulating the bottom line.
Precisely. And that strong growing cash flow is crucial for funding those huge investments and shareholder returns.
And how has this translated into profitability? How's their financial health managed?
Profitability metrics show steady improvement reflecting value from the investments. Return on equity, ROE, expanded from 10.2% in 2022 to 11.9% in 2024.
Which is pretty good for a capital-intensive utility, showing efficient use of capital.
It is. Now, leverage is substantial, as you'd expect, but it's managed conservatively, backed by that strong cash flow. Key credit metrics, like FFO net debt, were robust at 22.9% in 2023. That's a key focus for management and rating agencies. Interest coverage was healthy too, around 7.9x EBIT in mid-2025.
And maintaining those strong credit metrics must give them an advantage in financing all this growth. Cheaper borrowing costs, perhaps.
Almost certainly. A stronger balance sheet means better access to capital at more favorable rates compared to weaker peers.
Okay, let's break down where the growth is coming from by segment. Networks first.
Networks growth is mainly from investments increasing the regulated asset base, RAB, plus those periodic regulatory tariff updates in the US, UK, etc. It provides that high-quality, visible, low-risk earnings stream, the bedrock.
And renewables.
Growth there is driven by commissioning new capacity, especially those big offshore wind and solar projects coming online, and strategically securing long-term PPAs to lock in revenues and de-risk projects.
And generation and supply. Still more cyclical.
Yes, much more influenced by commodity prices. Margins can expand during volatility, like pumped hydro during the crisis, but can also compress. The strategy is clearly to reduce reliance on this more volatile segment over time.
Reinforcing that pivot towards stable earnings from networks and contracted renewables.
Exactly. And what's fascinating is looking at the quality and sustainability of those earnings, distinguishing the recurring from the one-offs. The underlying quality is high, anchored by that growing contribution from regulated and long-term contracted assets. Networks alone contributed 52% of group EBITDA in Q1 2025. That really confirms the effectiveness of the de-risking strategy.
But you have to look out for non-recurring items like asset sales.
Absolutely. Reported net profit in Q1 2024 got a big boost, $1.16 billion from that Mexico asset sale gain. But importantly, their adjusted figures, excluding that, still showed robust 28% growth. Solid underlying performance.
So asset rotation, selling mature assets to fund new growth is part of the strategy, but those gains aren't recurring earnings.
Precisely. It's like the home renovator analogy. The sale profit is nice, but sustainable earnings come from the value created by new projects.
Got it. Okay, this strong financial picture sets the stage for their future growth plans. So with that solid financial footing, Iberdrola isn't standing still. They're aggressively pursuing growth, especially in renewables.
That's right. Their growth strategy is fundamentally tied to expanding renewables. $15.5 billion gross investment plan for that segment, 2024-2026. And they're being selective, prioritizing high-value technologies with barriers to entry.
Like offshore wind, where over half that investment is going, into projects already under construction.
Exactly. A disciplined approach, focusing where their scale and expertise give them an edge. And the targets are ambitious. Grow total renewable capacity from around 47.6 gigawatt mid-2025 to 52 gigawatt by 2025, and an impressive 95 gigawatt by 2030.
95 gigawatts, wow. Including 3,000 milliwatt new offshore wind from 2027 and 2,100 milliwatt new solar PV by 2026.
It's a huge ambition. Achieving those targets would certainly cement their global leadership in the transition.
Now, connecting this back, you said network modernization is their single largest and most stable growth opportunity.
Yes. It's about building the infrastructure for the whole transition. The 2024-2026 plan puts 60% of net investment, $21.5 billion, into networks, aiming to grow that regulated asset base, RAB, to $56 billion by 2025. That's a 44% increase from 2022.
A massive investment to tackle that bottleneck getting renewable power from A to B.
Exactly. And over $6.5 billion of that is specifically for new high-voltage transmission lines. It solidifies their central role, building the superhighways for electricity.
Beyond organic growth, they're strategic with M&A too.
Yes, growth comes from both organic investment and disciplined M&A, focused on strengthening positions in those core A-rated countries.
Like buying Electricity Northwest in the UK, or taking full ownership of Avangrid in the US.
Perfect examples. Increasing scale and stable, regulated network businesses. And contrasted with the Mexico thermal asset sale, exiting less predictable markets or carbon-intensive assets. A consistent optimization strategy.
And they're also looking ahead at emerging technologies.
Definitely. Very proactive. Take energy storage. $1.5 billion allocated through 2026. Mostly expanding pumped hydro storage, a mature tech where they have existing assets and expertise, reliable, large-scale flexibility.
And green hydrogen. Still early days, but they're active.
A pioneer, really. Over 50 projects in 8 countries, but using that partnership model to manage costs and risks. Joint ventures with BP for industrial hydrogen, with H2 Green Steel for decarbonizing steel production. It allows them to strengthen reliable storage now while prudently exploring the high potential but still nascent green hydrogen market.
And that new opportunity,
yeah.
Data centers. Could that be transformative?
It's certainly intriguing. The explosive growth of data centers, cloud, AI creates immense constant demand for 247 clean energy. Iberdrola's venture with Echelon in Spain is strategic. They bring land, grid connection know-how, large-scale renewable supply to capture this completely new high-growth demand source.
Could this synergy with data centers be an underappreciated catalyst for growth in both renewables and networks?
It absolutely could be. Definitely a space to watch closely.
Okay, executing all this requires staggering amounts of capital. How do they manage these huge investments?
Their strategy is defined by that massive, disciplined capital expenditure program, a record $17 billion invested in 2024 alone, and the plan is $41 billion gross investment for 2024-2026. It underlines their commitment.
And net investment after partner contributions is $36 billion.
Right, with 70% dedicated to growth, and 60% of that net amount, $21.5 billion, goes to stable networks, the rest mainly to renewables, especially offshore wind.
Literally putting their money where their mouth is, funding the core sustainable businesses.
That's the plan.
But how do they balance all this reinvestment with shareholder returns, especially being so capital intensive?
They maintain a very strong, clear commitment to shareholder returns. The policy targets a dividend payout ratio of 65% to 75% of net profit. It was 65% in 2024. And they have a strong track record of dividend growth.
Providing predictability for income investors.
Exactly. The current plan targets about $11 billion in total distributions for 2024-2026. And crucially, establishes a dividend floor of 0.55 per share by 2026.
That explicit floor must provide a strong underpin for yield and investor confidence.
It's a powerful signal of stability and commitment to returns, definitely.
Now, managing debt is crucial. How do they ensure access to funding at good rates?
Through a sophisticated and conservative financial strategy, debt is well diversified by currency, euro, US dollar, sterling mainly, mitigates FX risk.
And fixed rate debt is key in a rising rate environment.
Absolutely critical. 74.3% of their debt is fixed rate. That shields financing costs from short-term market swings, provides cost certainty for projects.
Like a protective shield.
Pretty much. They also maintain a strong liquidity position, $22.1 billion in Q3 2024. Enough to cover financing needs for 20 months without going to market. Huge buffer.
And they're willing to use equity markets too, like that $5 billion capital raise in 2025.
Yes, demonstrates a willingness to tap equity to support growth and maintain balance sheet strength when needed, like for accelerated grid investment.
Okay, so a robust financial strategy. But no company is immune to external storms. Let's talk recent challenges.
Yeah, it's fascinating how even a company built for stability had to navigate that really turbulent 2022-2024 period. Mm. The energy crisis, commodity volatility, it was intense. That sharp cut in Russian gas supplies sent wholesale gas and electricity prices soaring up to 1,500% from early 2021 levels.
An unprecedented stress test for the whole sector.
It really was. Now, paradoxically, Iberdrola's low-cost generation hydro nuclear renewables actually benefited from those high electricity prices, boosted profitability there. But the retail supply business faced immense pressure from soaring procurement costs.
And those extraordinary profits attracted government intervention, windfall taxes, revenue caps.
Widespread intervention, yes,
yeah.
Which limited the financial upside. Plus, the crisis caused a significant drop in industrial electricity demand across the EU, hitting sales volumes.
How might those lessons learned shape their strategy going forward, reinforcing that move to regulated and contracted earnings?
I think it strongly reinforces it, making them even more determined to build resilience against future shocks.
And beyond the energy crisis, there were broader macroeconomic headwinds too. Inflation, interest rates, supply chains.
Yes, significant challenges for such a capital-intensive business. High inflation and supply chain snarls drove up costs for materials and equipment, steel, copper, turbines.
Directly impacting project economics and execution risk.
Absolutely. Then you had the sharp rise in global interest rates. That increased the cost of debt for new projects and also raised the discount rate used for valuing long-duration assets, pressuring valuations.
Like trying to build a house when materials and borrowing costs skyrocket.
Exactly that kind of pressure, but on a massive scale. It squeezed project returns across the industry, led some developers to delay or cancel projects. While Iberdrola's scale offered some buffer, they weren't immune. It increased execution risk on their big investment plans.
Which highlights the importance of risk assessment. What are the key risks Iberdrola faces?
Well, the most significant is probably regulatory and political risk. Their profitability is deeply tied to those frameworks. Adverse changes, lower allowed returns in the UK or US, windfall taxes, changes to renewable support like the US IRA tax credits could really impact earnings. They mitigate this with geographic diversification and focusing on stable jurisdictions. But the risk is always there.
Okay, what else? Commodity prices.
Commodity price exposure and hedging. Despite the strategic shift, some part of generation and supply remains exposed to volatile wholesale prices. They manage this with hedging, but the main mitigation is structurally reducing that exposure by growing networks and contracted renewables.
Interest rates.
Refinancing and interest rate risk. As a capital-intensive company, they're exposed, mitigated by that high percentage of fixed-rate debt, strong credit rating, and robust liquidity.
And finally, just getting the projects built.
Operational and execution risk. That $41 billion capital program is huge. Risks include construction delays, cost overruns from supply chains inflation, permitting challenges. Especially for complex offshore wind projects, they mitigate with deep expertise, supplier relationships, local supply chains, but the risk is substantial.
Understanding those challenges and risk is crucial. Okay, let's synthesize all this into the investment thesis. So after unpacking all that, what does it all mean? Let's boil it down to Iberdrola's key strengths and potential value drivers for you. First, clear leadership in the energy transition. They're a direct beneficiary of mandated decarbonization, with a massive $41 billion investment plan aligned with that trend.
Second, that stable regulated earnings base. Networks getting 60% of investment provides a growing foundation of predictable, often inflation-protected earnings, de-risking the model and supporting dividends.
Third, dominant position in high-growth renewables. Global leader, especially in capital-intensive offshore wind, with strong competitive advantages.
Fourth, financial strength and discipline. Conservative policy, strong balance sheet, robust credit metrics, high fixed-rate debt, strong liquidity enables reliable, cost-effective funding.
And fifth, attractive shareholder remuneration.
Mm-hmm.
Clear, consistent dividend policy, 65-75% payout target, strong cash flow. That 0.55 floor by 2026 provides a compelling income component.
But it's vital to balance that with the potential headwinds and risks, primary risk factors. Execution risk on that huge investment program is significant delays, cost overruns, especially offshore wind, regulatory and political uncertainty. Profitability depends on stable frameworks. Adverse changes could materially hit earnings. Macroeconomic headwinds. Prolonged high interest rates could increase cost of capital, squeeze returns, pressure valuations. And lastly, some remaining exposure to merchant power price volatility, which could impact earnings in low price environments.
So how does Iberdrola really fit into the bigger picture? What role might it play in a diversified portfolio?
Well, its business model looks highly sustainable, driven by that pivot to regulated and long-term contracted assets, reducing commodity exposure, enhancing earnings visibility. Its competitive advantages scale, integrated model, digital leadership seem durable, hard to replicate.
So for a portfolio?
It offers this unique blend of defensive and growth characteristics. Mm. You get utility, stability, and income combined with leading renewable energy growth exposure. It makes it a potential core holding for investors wanting to play the energy transition megatrend, but with a balanced risk profile compared to pure play renewables.
It's not just a utility, not just a renewable developer. It's kind of both offering something unique.
Exactly.
Well, that really was a deep dive into Iberdrola. We've seen a company positioning itself right at the heart of this massive energy transition globally, from navigating complex regulations to pouring billions into offshore wind and smart grids. It's clear they're not just reacting, they're actively shaping the future energy landscape.
Yeah, and what's fascinating is thinking long term. That commitment to regulated assets, contracted renewables. It's not just about financial stability now, it's really a bet on the enduring, inevitable shift to a decarbonized economy. And those partnerships in green hydrogen data centers, they show real foresight into the next wave of energy demand and supply, looking beyond the immediate horizon.
So what does this all mean for you listening in as we wrap up? Here's the thought to chew on. If companies like Iberdrola are building the fundamental infrastructure for a net zero future, what other seemingly boring infrastructure plays, maybe water, sustainable transport, waste energy, might be quietly shaping the next big investment opportunities? Something to think about. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. We hope you're leaving with a clearer, more nuanced view of this energy giant and the complex world it operates in. Keep that curiosity burning. We'll see you next time.